sounds maybe like an incredibly squeaky haunted door, like with bad hinges.
Or an incredibly squeaky haunted baby.
In this case, it is a incredibly squeaky, hopefully not haunted porcupine. How's that for a sound to start the show off, Heidi?
That's great. Because to me, honestly, it sounds like someone's in peril. And it sounds like a young, like, especially for maybe someone like me. And by the way, this is the Season Watch Pod. Thanks for tuning in with KEXE. I'm Heidi Holton.
I'm Charlie Mitchell.
I'm pointing to Charlie over the Zooms as we talk here. But I just remember the first time I heard an owl, something was going on. And I was like, did someone leave a baby? What is going on? Like, the sounds sometimes are just, holy cow. Mm-hmm. So that's a porcupine.
This was recorded in Nova Scotia. I will note, most of the time I try to find recordings from Minnesota to play on here. In this case, I couldn't find any porcupine recordings from Minnesota that were good quality. This one's from Nova Scotia, and it was just a audio recording device that they had just left at the forest, and they heard this porcupine coming by. So, in my opinion, it seems likely that this was a baby calling like that, but it's unclear. We do have two more porcupine sounds coming up for an excellent reason, which is that we got a voice memo from a listener, Nicholas Schwartz, who wanted to talk about the sounds of porcupines.
So I'm listening to you guys on Saturday morning about talking about porcupines, and maybe I was in the gas station, but I didn't hear you talk about their vocalizations. When I did conservation work out in the Maroon Bells Wilderness of Colorado, we were stationed in an area that was just infested with porcupines. I don't want to say infested, but there were a lot of them. And every night they would walk by our tents and eat our anything leather left out, try to eat the guy lines, and they would just make the weirdest noises, these little like, and they were just like these weird little goblins. We also got them stuck inside the vestibule of one of my friend's tents and went berserk, and we had another one that
went berserk.
I'm so upset that it cuts off right here.
I know.
Because I want to hear that story.
Well, first of all, Nicholas, are you at a gas station when you're calling this? This is just so interesting that he immediately just goes into these vocalizations. Nice job on the mimicking of it, by the way.
10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, my gosh. And they are just like little goblins. Their little feet and their little shuffling gait. Ugh. I do have, in honor of Nicholas's excellent impressions, I do have two other porcupine sounds to listen to. One of them is a porcupine chewing. The notes on that one on Xenocanto, it said that it was porcupine or porcupines chewing on an old wooden cabin. So that's the sound of their little teeth going. Ugh. And then, too bad for the cabin. Hilarious for us to get to listen to it. And then the next one is of some porcupines vocalizing in, I think, the manner that Nicholas was talking about.
Welcome to the weird world of nature, which we're going to hear also from some of our student phenologists later in Season Watch podcast. Holy cow, these sounds. I have never heard them in the wild. These porcupines.
I know. I got to hear them, you know, just from that run-in with a wild porcupine in Canada. And of course, there are some excellent YouTube videos of porcupines. One of my favorites is, it's like a mama porcupine up on, I assume, a wildlife rehabilitator's, like, deck. And then there's a baby porcupine nearby. And then the baby porcupine just, like, falls off the edge of the deck. Only 2 or 3 feet, but still. And mama porcupine just kind of stops eating for a second, waits to hear it, like, yell, and then just goes straight back to eating. It's great.
Oh my gosh. So we were listening to this on Tuesday morning on the KXC Tuesday morning show. And we get texts, you know, of course, while we're on the air. And we hear from Joni of the Bad Hairs, how we refer to her, sent us a picture of her dog, Ollie, on St. Patrick's Day in 2022. Can you describe what you're seeing now, Charlie, in front of you?
This is the most haunted, upset looking dog, kind of facing forward through a windshield with just a snout full of porcupine quills. Just like the very tip of the snout, but this poor dog does not seem to be having a good day.
Oh, the eyes here. Like,
the eyes.
Help me.
Yup. Please.
Ollie.
Please save me.
We'll have to post that photo that Joni sent in. And you've gone through this with your animals before?
Yeah. We had a dog named Celix. She was a Samoyed lab mix. So like kind of a big white fluffy dog mixed with like a black lab. And my brother and I had gone up to Canada like for one of my first times up there without my parents. And we'd brought the dog. And we were sleeping in late. Well, at least I was sleeping in late, as I do. And I heard the dog get into this big scuffle and barking and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, whatever, it's Celix. Like, I'm just going to let her be. And then she was just like panting and panting and panting outside the house. And I hear my brother get up and go check on her. And then I hear my brother yell for me. I go downstairs and she has just this face like full of, you know, what was the dog's name we just saw?
Ollie.
Little Ollie just had him like kind of sticking out the front of the snout.
Mm-hmm.
Celix, God bless her, also curse her, did not stop with the first little nose or the first little bite. She went all in and she had quills through her tongue all the way to the back of her mouth. She had some in her paws.
Yeah, I think you were telling us this because you had to find a vet or something, right?
We had to find a vet, yeah. And like, we're in Canada. I show up to the vet with no shoes on. We don't have vet money. We had to be like, my mommy will be here and then she'll pay you. It was so bad. It was so unfortunate.
This is making me realize probably a lot of people have porcupine stories, and I feel okay about not having interactions with porcupines before.
Yeah. They'll leave you alone if you leave them alone, but that was not my dog's way of life. She's not good at leaving wildlife alone.
Wow. Good to hear from you, Nicholas. Folks can leave us. It doesn't have to only be porcupine related, but leave voice messages through SpeakPipe. You find that.
Please. Yes.
KXE.org or in the podcast platforms. So another thing, like I think last week I said, I knew the minute we were going to talk about this that you would be on fire for it. What was it last week?
Salamanders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hello, prairie skink.
Yep.
Ready for
another good week to be me.
Here's Pam Perry, retired non-game wildlife biologist from the Minnesota DNR.
Well, listen, you know, we've covered the molt migration. We've covered the birds, the waterfowl. I want to hear about skinks and other little slimy critters.
Yes, and I know you were out, you know, finding four-toed salamanders. And then Charlie Mitchell was talking about salamanders on the podcast. And I was going, oh, yeah, I love salamanders. I haven't seen one yet this year. You know, and for many people, you don't see them because they're so elusive. Many of them kind of stay underground. We have 7 species in Minnesota, most common being the tiger salamander. And I remember the one year I was digging in my garden and, whoop, popped up a tiger salamander, which, whoa, you know, is unusual, you know, that it happens. But salamanders are amphibians, and so they're related to frogs. And they have this skin that can dry out. That's why they stay hidden a lot, either in the bogs or underground. If we go to lizards, Now, I find lizards, you know I like herps. I can talk about amphibians and reptiles a lot.
That's why it always astonishes me that we talk about birds all the time, and I know how fond you are of the slithering ones.
Since I was young, and I love them because you can go catch them.
Yeah.
And so we only have three species of lizards in Minnesota. And two of them are found primarily in southern Minnesota. They're very specific habitat-wise, and that's the five-lined skink and the six-lined race runner. But up here, up in central Minnesota and other parts of the state, you can find prairie skinks. And that's the only one, the only lizard you're going to find up here. And I saw one a couple times last week, because I was out gardening, and all of a sudden there's this quick movement, and up pokes this head, and I go, oh, prairie skink, boom, and it's gone, just like wow. That. You know, so I just think they're very cool. Not many in northeastern Minnesota or southeastern Minnesota.
I don't think I've ever seen one.
Yeah, and I see them every year. They like grasslands, they like open areas and sandy soils. And that's kind of what I've got on some of my property where they really like that. Just seeing a lizard, I just find that a very cool thing. And I'm sure some of our listeners have seen something like this. They go, what was that? What was that? And especially if you're in the Brainerd area or central Minnesota area.
These prairie skinks, are they as quick as, say, the ones that I have seen, not here, but the anoles that are down in the south, that just are like rocket fast?
They're quick. I've never caught one, and I don't want to try to catch them because, as you mentioned earlier, their tails can come off.
Yeah.
That's one of their predator escape devices, adaptations. And then they'll grow back another tail, but it's not as big, not as robust. And, you know, so I don't want to be left just holding the tail. But they are. They're very quick. They eat insects. They're great to have around. All of that. So anyways, that's just a few words about prairie skinks. And if anyone ever wondered, what was that I just saw? That's what it was up here.
Have you ever seen a lizard in Minnesota?
Oh, that's a good question. I think so. I couldn't tell you when, but yeah.
Yeah, they exist.
Yeah.
And most likely, whatever you saw, it would be that prairie skink.
Okay. Yeah, I think growing up, yeah, like by the sand of the beach at our resort, I think I saw.
Good habitat.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. They're not really present in like the Arrowhead region, and they're also not present in the Driftless region to the very far southeast corner. You know, that one weird part of Minnesota that wasn't glaciated?
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of weird biology going on down there, which I love. But yeah, northern prairie skink otherwise covers most of the state. And what I love about them, both the adults are amazing. The young ones have this like bright blue tail, like electric blue tail. They're so beautiful. But yeah, amazing, amazing critters. And I think, you know, if you ask a lot of folks in Minnesota, they might say that we don't have any lizards here. And we do. They're just fast and crafty.
Okay, so this is bringing up a lot for me, as you know, often happens, and maybe not nature related, but I was thinking about when you asked if I'd seen one, right? I'm like, oh yeah, I think I remember when I was a kid maybe seeing one. And that was when I was into reading these books called The Littles. I don't know if you ever heard of this.
Oh.
It's sort of like The Borrowers were also, like, I read those before The Littles. But The Littles were these tiny little, like, this whole, they call them humanoid creatures. So they're kind of like a mouse, but they had tails. So when I thought of that, I'm like, I think I saw them because I assumed it was The Littles, like it was a whole underground world.
How magical.
The Littles were there. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like the just a very, you know, this whole family of Littles, like Dinky and Tom and Lucy Little and all of these things. It's sort of, it, you know, Baby Betsy, Uncle Nick, Uncle Pete. I mean, like all of these littles. And then they made it into a television show. But I don't, I think, I think I was a little older. I wasn't watching it then because it was a littler sort of thing. And I loved any story that had, like The Borrowers was about these little human people, tiny, that live in a house and have their whole underworld, you know, going on. And so if you, you know, if you're missing a Cheerio, you know that the borrowers are eating a donut.
I like that. Yeah.
So anyway, well, sorry, but to in good move news, away from
there nature. Are entire magical little families going on underground.
See?
Just look at our salamanders.
You see?
Hanging out with the chipmunks all winter.
There you go.
Where's my children's book about that one?
Okay. That's what we're doing. We're just, this is just fodder for the multi-million dollar children's book series we're going to write, Charlie.
Yes. That's how I'm going to make my millions.
Just
okay.
Leave a voice memo, you know, with your information if you want to publish my book and Charlie's book together. We're going to co-author it. Oh,
excellent. I like our new plan.
Can you tell the air conditioning's out at KEXC that I'm a little off my rocker today?
A little extra loopy.
Yep. Having a good time. Thanks for tuning into the Season Watch Pod. It's always a lot of fun.
Yes.
Okay.
Speaking of things you enjoy, the clip I pulled for this week from John Latimer has to do with dragonflies. So hopefully we'll learn to identify a new species together.
Among the insects, the pond hawk dragonflies are out. The male is a beautiful sky blue, and the female is a almost electric green. They're two of my favorite dragonflies, really pretty. Last week, we talked about the chalk-fronted corporals. They have pruniesced. They have become white on the front and on the tail. The males have done that. The females are remaining brown, and there's still a bunch of juveniles, tenerals they're called, and they are also sort of brown. I saw my first fireflies this past week, and I saw some last night, so always fun to get out and see them. Finally, let's see, I had the pleasure of seeing a red-headed woodpecker, and they are quite rare nowadays around here. They used to be very common, but nowadays they are fewer and fewer of them. Most of them are found around golf courses because they like that forest without a lot of undergrowth. And in the old days, when you had a subsistent farmer out there, he had maybe 8 or 10 cows, a couple of pigs, some chickens. He let the cows just run in the woods, and they kind of kept the undergrowth down. And because he had fence posts made out of wood, there were lots of places for the red-headed woodpeckers to build a cavity. And they were plentiful when I was a child, but not so many subsistent farmers anymore, and not so many red-headed woodpeckers either. First robins have fledged this week. I talked to Bill from Blue Water Lake, and Bill was telling me that the robins fledged at his house, and the female promptly filled her nest with eggs again for her second chance at it. I once had a robin in my garage who raised four fledges. She fledged four groups of babies in 1 year, which was a phenomenal effort on her part. I commend her.
It's an impressive robin.
Yeah.
Oh. Before we get into the dragonflies, I do want to note, just from a conservation perspective, fledgling robins will come out of the nest before they're fully able to like fly up to a perch. And so they'll have about, I don't know, I'd have to check my sources, but a day of being on the ground, unable to fly, but their parents are still visiting them and bringing them food. So a lot of folks will find like this little bird on the ground and think that it needs help and scoop it up and bring it to wildlife rehab or like try to keep it alive themselves. But for the most part, if it has what looks like flight feathers instead of like the really downy stuff, it has kind of more normal feathers. Sometimes they'll still have some like downy like stuff coming out of their heads, but if they look for the most part well feathered, they kind of have like this bright yellow outside edge of their beak. Most likely it's just fine. The parents are checking on it. You can just leave it be.
Well, I want to talk about robins, but I also, John's talking there about the dragonflies, and I made a
yes.
I'm looking at a photo of the chalk-fronted corporal dragonfly. Yes. I think I have seen this one. I'm going to have to pay a lot more attention here. I'm going to work on that. And they are definitely out there. And it makes me very happy because I don't feel like they have as much work to do because we still, I shouldn't say it out loud, but we still don't have many mosquitoes.
Good. Hey, let's not look a gift horse in the mouth.
I'm assuming, do they eat the gnats and stuff too?
Or yes, they do. Okay. Yep.
Because we have a lot of gnats, so they have plenty to eat, I guess. Yeah. Huh?
But yeah, pretty distinctive once you get an eye for them. Those like two white stripes right on the front of the thorax. Pretty easy to tell. And then you should look up pictures of the Eastern Pond Hawk because they are gorgeous. They're relatively large, just bright, bright blue dragonfly. And there's some other blue dragonflies as well, but this one has these like bright green eyes, bright green face to them. And the females, so those are the males. The females are bright green with kind of a black striped abdomen. They're both stunning. And they are often described as our most ferocious dragonfly, and they will eat anything pretty much their size or smaller.
But they don't, like, they don't bite us.
Nope.
This is why they're the heroes, right?
Yep. Nope, they're great for us.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit about robins because I need your advice here, Charlie, okay? We have a situation going on, all right? And I don't want robins to die is my goal here. Mm-hmm. So there is a robin's nest that my husband noticed, and it's in this structure that we have that is the observatory. He's an astronomy kind of guy, right? And it's this unusual sort of thing where the roof is on wheels and it wheels open to use the telescopes. Well, somehow the little nest is right in there in a way that once the eggs hatch or once things start to happen, they're probably not going to be able to get out of this house.
Because the roof is closed?
Yes.
Or because...
Yeah.
Okay. So you need to open it for them to be able to get out.
Right, but we need to do the timing because we don't want to just leave it open so that it's open to the elements, you know, and other things like that.
So how is the adult bird getting in and out right now?
That I don't know because I haven't actually, I'm going to check that out. But he's looked up like the time period and from when he saw the robin, I don't know how much he saw of it, but we're trying to think, we'll open up the front door of this, not the roof part. Because I think it might damage the nest if we open up the roof part is maybe some of it. It'll roll by or something. So we can open up the front door, but we don't want to just keep it open the whole time. So he said something about 10 to 12 days or something. And so he's kind of counting. But do you have any other ideas on what we can do to make sure these robins are okay?
So... first, I would check if there are eggs in the nest.
Okay.
If that's possible, a ladder or something. I don't know how high up it is.
Yeah.
If there aren't any eggs in the nest, I would just remove the nest and she can go build a nest somewhere else.
Okay.
Easy peasy. Okay. If there are eggs in the nest, then apparently the adult is able to get in somehow or another.
And so the baby should be able to get in and out.
She'll be able to sit on the eggs, incubate them, and hatch them just fine.
Okay.
So what I would do is I would check in on them until you see like eggs, until you see little nestlings in the nest.
Okay.
And from that day, you can count. Let me check my book.
Charlie picked up the largest
Birds of Minnesota,
the largest book I've ever seen.
Yep. It was my computer stand for a while because it is massive. All right. American Robin. You know what? This is a simple Google. I don't know why I'm doing this the hard way.
You want to be cool and show off your
robin
book.
Yep. Time in nest. Go. So from the day that they hatch, about 14 to 16 days, they'll probably be hopping out.
Okay.
14 to 16 of the days. Nest. And that is when, once they're on the ground, I would open up the doors and usher them out into the world.
See, the odd thing about this is I'm in charge because Tom has had surgery. Yeah, and so he's not able to do this, but I think he probably did. Yeah. I think he did see eggs before his surgery. And so now, like, this is one of the things on my task list is to figure this out. So,
yeah. So you're caretaking, you got a full-time job, and you have these robins. how close is the observatory to, like, a forested area? Like, is there a tree within a few feet of the structure?
Yeah. Move it?
I wouldn't say that. Like, moving it may not be a bad idea.
Okay.
If you can get it, like,
you know what I'm going to do? If that's the case, I'm going to invite John Latimer over.
Great. Yep.
It'll be a thing. I would be too worried that I'm ruining the structure of this nest, or I'm doing something. I just haven't. I mean, I know I can do it. I'm an adult, but you know, I just think it could be a good fun.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to have a buddy. Yep. moral support.
Okay, thank you.
Especially John Latimer.
This has
been the best buddy.
A really good counseling session for me. I really appreciate it.
But I will say, if anyone else has a similar problem, you can move the nest.
Okay.
Like, generally within, you know, bird's earshot, if it has fledglings in it, and Mama Bear will find the nest again.
Okay, so it's not that I'm... Yeah. We're, you know, the whole thing of, like, it's going to, the mother's not going to want to go to it anymore because a human touched it.
That is a myth.
You can
let that one go.
All right. Yeah. All right. We'll let that one go. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're listening to the radio broadcast of Season Watch Pod, you're going to want to check out the podcast because you're going to get a little extra this week. But we do want to thank all the folks involved so far in the program.
Doug Hines was the one who recorded the porcupine in Nova Scotia. Brian Henderson did both of the recordings for the porcupine, the chewing sounds and then the goblin-like vocalizing. Nicholas Schwartz sent us that voice memo through SpeakPipe. Thank you so much. Pam Perry, of course, on the skinks. John Latimer with the dragonflies, robins, and fireflies. And stick around or go to the podcast version for our friends at Long Lake Conservation Center.
Support for Season Watch Podcast comes from the Sugar Lake Lodge near Grand Rapids, a Northwoods setting on the shores of Sugar Lake, offering lodge rooms, cabins, and golf villas, with on-site dining, a golf course, and access to the lake, trails, and seasonal outdoor recreation throughout the year. Plan your stay at sugarlakelodge.com.
Well, congratulations, you podcast listeners. You get a little extra today on the Season Watch Pod, and if you're listening and if you have a question you need solved in your life, Charlie will go after it. I'm telling you, like my robins.
Will I ever? Yes.
But you need to leave a SpeakPipe message for us in order for that to happen. And even if you can say in that message if you don't want us to use your voice, but just want the question out there too. We're, you know, we're kind people. But we want to make sure, you know, this is all the more important right now that people get involved in this and start telling us what they're seeing or questions that they have. We never mention this, but we do a very, very, very active Facebook page called Season Watch, and that's where this name came from. And it's a community of people that are curious and are answering questions for each other. So we recommend that you check that out and join the Season Watch Facebook page, because that's a lot of fun too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't have a personal Facebook page myself, but I sometimes break in through the station account to see what people are posting, and it's phenomenal what people see and the knowledge that's shared there. It's great.
Yeah.
Fantastic use of the internet.
That's what I was going to say. That is one of the very few great reasons to be on Facebook. This is just a positive, positive place with beautiful photography and lots of curious questions. So we need you to get involved, though, because we will not have as many student voices going on over the summertime, of course. And so we want more people, and you are invited to join us in this broadcast. We think that would be a lot of fun. Maybe that's going to mean we're going to invite some guests on the podcast, too, during the summertime.
Please. I have some thoughts on who we might be able to invite.
Okay, that sounds good. But let's take a listen to some students that did leave a report this week.
Hi, this is Livy
and Lucas from Madison Elementary School in Blaine. During our trip to Long Lake Conservation Center on June 1st and 2nd, the high temperature was 80 degrees Fahrenheit and the low was 38. Our group saw some unusual things, including a dead garter snake that was somehow tied in a knot. Weird! We also saw large clumps of forest tent caterpillars in the thickets. When they moved, they looked like they were dancing. Weird! We found a frog deep in the bog, a place where frogs don't normally go. Weird!
We saw a lot of normal things as well, including a baby snapping turtle, tadpoles, chipmunks, deer, muskrats, a painted turtle, lots of dragonfly exoskeletons in the water, wild calla blooming by the dock, and sundew emerging in the bog. We have some sad news to report. The loon eggs were eaten by an unknown predator overnight on Monday, just a few days short of hatching. A plump and healthy looking otter was seen hunting near the nest the next day. We wonder if the loons will try again this summer. You never know what weird and interesting things you'll see when you explore nature, and we want to remind everyone to unplug, get outside, and live connected.
So good to hear from the students visiting Long Lake Conservation Center.
Absolutely. I think that's going to be one of our last regular school groups for the year before they start off with their summer campers, to always have some fun stuff to see. But I loved their sign off there. It was, "You never know what weird and interesting things you'll see when you explore nature." And boy, is that true.
Okay, Charlie Mitchell needs that needle pointed on a pillow. So if anyone has any skills, I think that needs to happen. Don't you?
It's true. Yep, I think that's true. I have been really enjoying this last week, the weird and wonderful world of moths. Mm. They've been getting these odd bonk, 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 bonk noises on our window at night.
Oh.
And some are louder than others, and we had some particularly loud ones in the last week, and, you know, we looked out the window, and there was just this huge, huge moth just kind of bouncing against our window pane, trying to get to the light. And I went outside with my bug net, as you do.
Mm-hmm.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Me. Anyway.
And scooped up. So in the last week, I've scooped up a modest sphinx moth, which is a great name. It has kind of, you know, plain tan and brown mottled forewings. But then the hind wings, when they're out, are like this beautiful purple and blue color. But when it just sits there, it kind of hides them. So that's, I think, how it gets its name,
the modest.
And then I caught a Polyphemus moth, mm-hmm. which have these like huge eye markings on their hind wings. And these two little windows where it's just this transparent, you can see straight through it, like almost like a dragonfly wing material. It's just beautiful. And then there was a smaller, very, very fuzzy moth that I caught. It was just really cute, kind of orange, kind of nondescript, much smaller than the other two I was just talking about. And it was an Isabella tiger moth, which is the adult version of a woolly bear caterpillar.
Aw.
But I never, saw an adult one before.
Great.
Yeah. So, speaking of weird and wonderful.
Yeah.
That's my moth speech.
I want to give a little example. I am looking at the Facebook Season Watch group that we had mentioned, and Erica mm-hmm. Bailey Johnson, a friend of KEXC, has some photos here and posted. Erica said, "I'm trying to understand the difference between Eastern and Canadian tiger swallowtail butterflies. Found this one on the road that got hit by a car. They are so beautiful, and they seem so plentiful this year. My book says the Canadian has an unbroken submarginal spot band on the ventral forewing." Huh?
Amen, Erica. As I immediately grab my butterfly book, which is Butterflies of the Northwoods by Larry Weber. That's some technical language.
Yeah, beautiful photos. This again is on our Facebook Season Watch page that KEXC sponsors, and is a great way to learn about things or do exactly what Erica did there, ask a question.
Okay, Eastern tiger swallowtail is larger, with more yellow above, and the light band along outer margin is broken up by dark veins. Okay, sure. Oh my god. Okay, yeah, you would need it to be sitting still to figure that out. It's this just tiny little stripe of yellow just along the top edge of the wing that if it's yellow all the way through, it's unbroken. It's a Eastern tiger swallowtail. And if it's, ooh, that If it is broken by black, it's a Canadian tiger swallowtail.
Okay.
But it would need to be sitting still. I'm happy if I know it's a swallowtail. That's the point that I'm at with butterflies. But yeah, looking at these pictures, I don't know if I would be able to figure it out without it somehow sitting very still and me getting very close to it.
Also, another example here in the Season Watch Facebook page, a pair of Eastern Phoebe have nested at my garage. This is just today in Grand Rapids. I rigged a trail camera. We'll be watching the progress. So cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Phoebes are like these little flycatchers. They're so cute. They have this kind of like poofy little head, and then they bounce their little tails whenever they land. And their nests are so beautiful. They're like covered in moss and kind of cup-shaped and, oh, five little eggs.
Yeah.
Cute.
And you can see the video beneath it.
I wish the baby's the best. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's great. Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, I need to hop back on. Thanks. I need to figure out how to get back to our station account so I can creep on that.
Thanks, Dan, for posting that. And we recommend you join us and on Season Watch and on this podcast. I know we've said it a lot, but we honestly really want to hear from you.
We do. Yeah.
So check it out. Leave us a voice message through SpeakPipe. And I can't wait to find out what the heck you have seen next week.
Absolutely. Let me know what dragonflies you spot.
All right. I'll work on it.
All right.